Hi, everyone. So I'm a PhD candidate in civil and environmental engineering, which is a little different. So you'll be learning a little bit more about water today, I think, than you probably expected, and other kind of infrastructure services, but about how ICTs can be applied to infrastructure services. And so I just wanted to acknowledge my colleagues on this is Anu Sridharan and Ari Omas, who are former Berkeley students that have moved to India full-time to work on this project, and Tejo and Tap, who have been working as advisors for a while. So it's a little bit different. It's very light on the technical content because actually the way that it works itself is actually very, very simple. Technologically speaking, it's the socio-technical systems that are really the hard part about it. So I'm going to be kind of focusing more on that. And I'm going to be talking about water. However, the system that we've built, we've kind of built in mind of thinking about all the other sort of any unreliable public service, whether it's electricity or water or irrigation water, food delivery. There's kind of a number of things that this same kind of system can be applied to. So I want to describe the system, present an example of it, show the data that comes out of it, and then kind of hopefully lead a discussion about what other applications this could be used for. So we're talking about piped water, which is not provided continuously. So water that comes out of the tap, maybe in or near home, but is only provided for a few hours per day or a few hours per week. It's known generally as intermittent water supply. It's a problem. All the countries that are outlined in blue are some of the places where intermittent supply exists. So it's a problem throughout Eastern Europe, Asia, Africa, Latin America. I'll specifically be talking about India, which has some of the most severe intermittent supply. These are kind of average durations of supply for each of the states in India. No major city in India has continuous water supply. Many of them have even less than 2 hours a day. So we're talking specifically about Hubli, which is a city in Karnataka. Hubli and Dharwad are twin cities with a population of 1 million, where most people have access to treated municipal piped water, but it's only supplied every 2 to 15 days, depending on the time of the year. I realized I didn't actually include a slide on this, but someone, given the discussion that happened this morning about how this project really came to being, I just wanted to speak for a minute about that. So I'm actually studying water quality in intermittent piped water supplies, and I've been working in this city and working with the utility since 2007, and I was trying to take water samples and to find where the water was actually on at any time, and no one could tell me where the water was on when. And so working with the utility, we just formed a great relationship with them, and I brought it back to a class at UC Berkeley in the School of Information called ICTs for Development, and we found a group of students and worked on developing a solution to this problem, and this is how NextDrop, which is now a social enterprise, was born. So just a little bit, if you're unfamiliar with intermittent water supply, is why does it exist? Because everyone just says, well, why don't you just change it to continuous water supply? Isn't that, you know, the obvious solution? And that would be great, except there is a variety of problems. It's not just necessarily shortage of water. In many cases, it's not about shortage of water. It's about a scarcity of management ability. It's a scarcity, economic scarcity. The infrastructure is not sized correctly. There's a low cost recovery. There's poor management because there's not information about the system, there's high leakages, there's just a lot of problems that need to be solved in order to get to continuous supply. So this is why we're really focusing on making what already exists better for people. When you live in a city with water that's once a day and you don't know when it's coming, it causes a lot of problems for households. Coping costs of this are very well documented. There's health repercussions and economic repercussions. You need to pay for storage containers for your water. You might need to buy treatment products. There's all sorts of costs that come with this. Specifically looking at the coping costs of unreliability. So it's one thing if you know that the water's coming at 8 a.m. every day. But it's different if you aren't sure the day that it's going to come and the time it's going to come. So that can mean that you are waiting around for hours. You don't go to work because you need to get the water. Or you keep your kids home from school. You might have to turn to alternative sources. Groundwater in Hubli is pretty bad quality, so it might be an unsafe source of water. And then just general stress and well-being of waiting for water is a problem. So a little bit about U.S. water distribution systems is it's a very complicated network of generally hidden infrastructure. It's under the ground. You can't really see too much of it. So you might have a water treatment plant connected to service reservoirs, going through pipelines, and going to households. And often, especially in larger cities of 1 million people, like the city in India where we're working, you have a lot of information about the system. You might have level sensors on the service reservoirs to tell you how much water you have, water quality sensors to tell you if the water is coming out good or not. Customers can complain, and you can address those complaints. You know exactly how much water everyone's consuming. You know if there's a drop in pressure in the system. So there's a lot of information that's going on. Even in smaller, less resource systems, there's still a lot of information and feedback and backup, such that if one reservoir fails, usually you have another one. So this kind of flow of information is going around. In an intermittent supply, as in Hubli, instead of having water always in every part of the system and all of these backups and this information, instead you send water to the treatment plant, it fills up a reservoir, fills up the next reservoir, you send it through a pipeline, and then you send to it to small areas for a few hours. So this area might get it for 2 hours, next area gets it for 3 hours, and the next area gets it for 5 hours or something, depending on the population. But what happens is that if there's an interruption, let's say the water treatment plant, the pumps go down because the electricity goes out and you can't actually provide any water from the water treatment plant, then that's going to slowly close down the supply in the rest of the city, and then people downstream can't get any water. And this is what causes the delays. You might have a pipe break, a major pipe break, which happens very, very frequently, which will then cut off supply to everyone else downstream. So there's all of these things. So while there's a nice little schedule, like these people should get water, this, and it rotates around, there's just tons of unexpected things that happen in reality. And that's what we really need to deal with and get information about in order to alleviate this problem. So to run this supply, they have what are called valvemen. There's 52 of them in Hubli that run over 800 valve operations in a supply cycle. Right now, it's every 5 days. So it's just very complicated. You have all of these valvemen and the engineers kind of telling them what to do, and then they run around place to place and turn on and off the water. So there's a whole lot of room for error, never mind all of the other upstream problems that can happen. It's very ad hoc communication. One valveman will call another to tell him to turn on the water supply and so forth. So there's not really information flowing. It's generally top down, but there's no feedback mechanisms, no oversight, and no really good information available. So right now the schedule for water delivery is written down. You can kind of see the data log in the background here. They kind of write it down, but again, it's often delayed or changed, and engineers and valvemen just kind of adjust on the fly when they need to because of everything that happened. And these paper data logs are never aggregated or not really put to use and not really accurate all the time. So the result is households don't know when the water will come. The valvemen don't have accountability, and they don't really know if there's a problem upstream that's going to affect their ability to supply water. So the valvemen don't know that it's going to come, and yeah, they don't really have accountability, so no one's checking if they're actually doing their job. And the utility engineers, who are kind of on the top, the chief engineers, the executive engineers, they don't know if anyone below them actually did their job, if they actually provided water, how long people got water for, how many days between supply. There's no feedback mechanism. So this is where NextDrop comes in. So NextDrop kind of stands in the middle of all this. And so there's the engineers, the utility level engineers, who get and receive information from NextDrop. There's the valvemen who send in updates, which I'll explain in a minute, to the NextDrop system. And then there's the water consumers who will receive information about when water is going to be delivered and can also provide feedback if something is going wrong. So the way it works is that the valvemen, the ones who are actually turning on and off the system, update to NextDrop. So we have an interactive voice response system. So they call in and they say, what type of message are you wanting to give? So we have four different types of messages that they can send in. So there's advance notice, which means they're going to supply water sometime. We aim for about 30 minutes. It could be anywhere within an hour. Valve open, which is that they're literally opening the valve right now to a particular area. Valve close, and last minute changes. So sometimes they turn on the valve, and then a pipe breaks, or the reservoir runs out of water, and they can't supply the full amount of water that they were planning to give. So they can update it if something else happens. So the IVR system is very simple. People call in, it speaks to them in the language that they speak in Hubli, Kannada, and it asks what message you want to give, what valve number it is. Kind of on the back of their phone, they have taped the area name and the corresponding valve number. They enter that in, very easy. This valve open is really the key. So we've kind of promoted all four of these, but in order for us to send information to the consumers of water, sending this valve open notification is really the most important part of it. So then residents receive the update that the valveman has opened the area valve or that there's an advanced notice or whatever it might be. They can opt to receive an SMS or a voice update. So we had been mostly just doing SMS, but a lot of literacy is a problem, especially since a lot of people just have these very basic phones. They can only display English, so unless you can read English, you might not necessarily know that it's a message. So IVR, an automatic voice call, has become more popular. So it's a very simple architecture. I'm not a computer scientist, so forgive me, so I can try to explain. But it runs on Django, and we send responses, and everything is stored in the relational database. And then the users all interact. So the browser is where NextDrop employees and the kind of higher level utility engineers interact with the system. And then there's the SMS gateway or Cuckoo for the IVR system, which is how users, so the valvemen or the customers, interact with everything. So these are all very readily available services. We originally started to build our own, especially for IVR, we used Asterisk to build our own system. But then Cuckoo is just available in India, and we can use that. So what we're trying to do is just piece together things that already exist and spend more of our time focusing on what we can really provide more value on that other people aren't working on, which is how to actually put the system together and make it interact with users and make it useful. So I'm going to talk a bit about the results of what sort of data is it that we're getting. Is this actually useful to people? And how well are we able to get people to crowdsource this information and to participate in the system? So right now we've been doing door-to-door sign-up of all of the households that are enrolled in the system. This is because partly it's very hard to map out these little areas. We call them supply areas or valve areas, so groups of people that receive water at the same time. There's no existing maps for it. The only really knowledge that exists are the valvemen themselves, and even then, they're a little bit not sure of the knowledge. So we have to go through and map the areas and then sign people up door to door, because also address information can also be very loose. And if someone tells us kind of their address, my address is near a certain temple. And so it can be within about a 6-valve area range. So right now, the process has been to go door to door, see where they are, see how it lines up with the map that we've developed with the valvemen, and then match them to a valve area. We're working on some new things in order to make that more automatic so anyone can just sign up. They've been operating in over 20 valve areas. The first one was started in July 2010. And they have a signed partnership agreement with the utility. So they have mandated that all of their valvemen participate in NextDrop. And they're also really interested in the data. So we've been giving them weekly reports on kind of summarizing the information, and we're hoping to build that partnership up more. And so for me, especially as an environmental engineer who works on intermittent supply, this is the first data that exists about intermittent supply. It's hard to even figure out which cities in India, how many hours they supply, because there's usually just estimates of how many days and how many hours. This doesn't exist otherwise. So it's really exciting to finally have this sort of information, whether it's for the utility reporting to the government or just for people to know, like, how often is water being supplied and for how long. So but first, if we look, the big question is, are these valvemen willing to send in notices? They already have a lot to do. Is it too much effort for them to actually call into the system? So this is just showing some of our first results over the period of 3 months, where each of the x-axis, everything is different areas. And it's showing the percentage of updates out of the total possible updates that each area could have received. So in general, we're actually having a really good response from valvemen who are sending in the updates. And these open notices are most critical to providing households with information about when the water will come. So having high participation, we monitor this to figure out if there's problematic areas. The big question is, what are the long-term incentives for the Valve to continue participating? Right now, we're going on the technology cool factor. They think it's awesome that they can call in and report that they're opening the water. This isn't going to last that long, so we don't really want to turn to financial incentives, but might have to. So we're working on what is it that really will motivate them. So we've actually had a student there who's been measuring the amount of phone calls that Valvemin would have to make before next drop, and then how many they have to make after. And they found over a 50% reduction in the amount of phone calls they've needed to make after next drop because there were so many problems. People in their area knew their phone number, so if the water was delayed, the Valvemin was getting calls all the time. And so the water was delayed by a day, they would just shut off their phone because they were so tired of people calling and calling and calling them. So this actually, in the end, is saving them a whole lot of time and headache. So hopefully that will kind of continue because we can make their job easier. This is looking at the close notices. The last one was open notices. The close notices. What we found is that though we've been trying to emphasize the importance of saying you're closing the valve, is as you can see, there's a lot of this lighter color here, which means that a lot of times valvemen are missing it. And this is because there's been a lot of reluctance to send it in. And our guess is because this is where the corruption is happening. Valvemen will get bribes to provide more water to certain areas. So they can't really just turn it on earlier because if there's not upstream water, no water will come out. But they can leave it on for an extra hour if someone pays them. And so this is where we've had a whole lot of trouble collecting this sort of information, and we think it's because of this reason. So this is why we've adjusted the system to say to make it more voluntary. If they want to send it in, that's great, but we don't want to endanger them sending in any notices. So we kind of have to do with the littlest amount of information that we can to make the system work so that we don't mess up the whole system. And really, we don't need this to send to people. We're not sending out valve close notices, but it will be useful for what I'll talk about, which is building predictive models and for the utility to know durations of supply. And also, if we look at how often people can provide advance notices, it's not always known to valvemen. There's sometimes when they just get the call from whoever's higher up above them to say, turn the water on now. There's some areas where I think we're just never going to know advance notice because it's just so variable. But hopefully we can move on to including predictive models so that we can get to sending more advanced notices. This looks a little confusing at first, but we have the days stretching over 2 months at the bottom. And then at the y-axis, we have each different valve area. And so each kind of filled-in box means that supply was provided on this day. And so this is really the first information that's been available about the days between water supply. So you can see in an area like this, this means that there was 4 days between supply. And then you can see that a few weeks later, then suddenly there was 2 days between supply and then 6. So you can imagine how useful this information is for people because the water supply really is very unreliable. And they would have missed the water if they were waiting every 4 days like they were used to, and then it came every 2 days and then every 6 days, they would have missed the water otherwise. And then you can see some areas that are just always all over the place. So these people, maybe they live in kind of the end of the line, or they don't have a very powerful political representative, so they're just kind of getting water every 2 days, every 6 days, just all over the place. So this sort of information, we want to make it available, potentially publicly available, so that we can work on more equitable supply, too, across all of these different areas. And also we collect... Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, I forgot to say that. Yep. So the gray color is updates that the valvemen should have sent but didn't. So if we saw a long gap in the supply, we would actually call the valvemen and say what happened. And sometimes, those six-day gaps were verified because they said, oh, there was a pipe break or there was a treatment failure. The gray boxes are the valvemen not reporting. Yep. So this is not the entire city. This is a subset of the city. So water is being supplied somewhere else. So this is only, there's about 800 different valve areas. So this is showing data on about 25 of them right now. We're working in about 50 at the moment. So we can also get supply start times. So this kind of, the two different colors are just two different areas, because if I put them all in, it would be a little too confusing. It's just to illustrate it. And these are the start times on different days over 2 months. And the gray shaded box at the top is the government or the utility dictated start time. So these two areas should always start within that time. Usually it's about an hour after, which isn't too bad. But you can see that there's a fair number of times where it's much later. So again, this is some of the first information that says water really is late very often. And you can see, you know, the potential value to people if it often comes at one time, they're expecting it, and then suddenly it doesn't actually come until 4 after in the afternoon. So I'll talk in a minute, but we've had a lot of anecdotal evidence that the most useful part of NextDrop is allowing people to go to work when they otherwise would have stayed home to wait for the water. Because if they're expecting water at 7 a.m. and it doesn't come until 4, they're waiting at home because they don't want to miss the water, and so they forgo work. There was a university professor we met at a nearby university who would run home between all of our classes every hour and a half to check if the water was on. So a service like NextDrop would enable someone like that to be able to come home, wait for the message, and then go home or ask a neighbor or something to fill water. And then this is also where it gets really interesting, especially in the equity standpoint, is looking at supply durations. This is a CDF, and it shows each different line is a different supply area. They're all supposed to get 2 to 3 hours of supply, which is kind of that gray shaded area. You can see about 4 of them do most of the time, and about 3 are getting a very much longer duration of supply, an average of about 4 to 5 hours. So there's two things that could be happening here. One is the schedules are made by higher-up engineers who don't really know how many people are in each supply area. So they're just kind of saying, okay, everyone gets 2 to 3 hours, but that might not be realistic because it might be double the amount of people in one area, so you want to provide more water. The other, of course, could be this corruption issue that I spoke of, where certain areas are getting more because they're able to pay the valvemen more. But this sort of information, again, wasn't available before, and now we can give this to the utility, and they can either update their schedules or they can try to track what's actually going on and figure out and try to fix some of these issues. So, as I said, the consumers receive water consumers and households receive updates through SMS or IVR. SMS right now is 10 rupees, which is about 25 cents. And then IVR is 15 rupees, so 50% more. If they have a below poverty line card, it's called a BPL card, which is an Indian government system, then we charge them half the rate. So people are, they get 1 month free, and they are signing up. Again, the open valve notices, we're reliably able to send to people. So we're actually conducting a full impact evaluation right now. We have a UC Berkeley student who's going to be doing, we're going to randomize the rollout of NextDrop to different valve areas over the next 4 months. So we'll actually be able to measure the impact on households from an economic and well-being standpoint. But we have some anecdotal impact and some kind of informal user surveys as we've been going on. And the one of the really interesting ones is that initially, households are giving us the male head of household phone number when we first go and ask for it. And after about a month, and once they kind of trust the service, then they're asking to change the number to the female head of household, who is the one that's usually collecting the water and the one who it's relevant to. So initially there's some distrust and they only want to give out the male's number, but they're switching over, which means people are using it and they're trusting the service. We found in general that it's actually most useful to households about once a month. It's that once a month that maybe water comes much later, or sometimes the water is early, so they miss it. They would miss it otherwise, or maybe they were away at a wedding or at work and they weren't expecting the water and they were able to arrange it. So it's not necessarily useful for everyone every single time, but it's useful for that once a month kind of situation, and for them, that's enough. And most households have been middle and upper income. We're working on some pilots in slum communities. And so far, almost everyone, over 90%, I think it's actually higher than that, have converted from, after the 1 month free trial, have converted to a paid service. I realized I didn't actually put the numbers up here. We currently have 10,000 paying customers, with another 20,000 who are signed up receiving the free service, and in the next month will be asked to pay. So kind of the big picture vision, this is a picture of the back-end dashboard of NextDrop. So you can see the little bubbles are the valves that are either on or off. But really, the big picture vision are some of these other system features of the distribution system. So a water pump, for example, or a service reservoir. And we want to start tracking the information, is the water pump on or off? Or what are the reservoir levels? And that way, we can actually get all of these distribution components. Like I talked about, there's the US systems that have all of this information about the distribution system and how it works together. If we know all of the same information about the distribution system, we can both make better predictions and actually anticipate problems many, many hours before they come, but also provide small bits of information to the utility employees who really need this. So if the reservoir gets below a certain level, we want to have the system send a text message to the relevant engineer to say, turn on the pump to fill up the reservoir. So we're working on this sort of full distribution system. So it's really about using, rather than using sensor networks, it's about using people who are already there, who are already watching these things and maybe writing it down in a logbook, to instead send the information to a place that can actually make sense of it and then send it on to the relevant parties. So this is really the long-term vision that I'm especially really excited about. So again, I didn't really go into many of the technical details. I talked more about kind of the context and the social part around it. It's really a very simple system, though. The technology is easy. Many people are working on it, developing it. A lot of it's open source. But the socio-technical part of it is what's really difficult. So we've really focused on leveraging the available technologies that are already out there. But the hard part is the buy-in and ensuring that there's participation from everyone. We need the valvemen, the consumers, the utility. We need everyone to work together and to trust each other to do this. And it involves very complex on-the-ground knowledge of this particular infrastructure system. We need to know how intermittent supply works, where the kind of key potential pitfalls are. And the next big questions, too, are what can be done with all this data? Once we get information about water levels and supply timings and pump data, how can we put it all together and present it to utility employees in a way that's meaningful, that can allow them to improve the actual service they're providing? So I just want to say there's some others that have been working on ICT for water in development. So Water for People, which is an NGO, has a system called Flow that's on an Android platform that talks about, or that tracks functioning of small community water supplies. They've been working in Malawi. And there's a few other projects. And there's actually a great report that was just put out a few weeks ago by the Pacific Institute called MWASH, Mobile Applications for Water Sanitation and Hygiene Sector, that's really overviewing how much this is going to be important to water and sanitation in the coming decade. And again, I want to mention some of the other ways that we can use the same system, the same backbone, understand a complex infrastructure service, and then figure out how we can make it more reliable for people. So one of the ones most of our customers have been suggesting are gas canisters. So the gas that they use for cooking, you have to register with the government, you have to get into a waiting list. It's a very complicated process. So if they had some kind of updates in order to tell them how long the wait might be and when it might be delivered, that's actually been the most requested feature. But we're also potentially looking at electricity outages. Electricity is also intermittent in Hubli. Irrigation water, food and aid shipments, and pension payments. So all of these are unreliable public services that people spend a lot of money and time waiting for. And so we want to figure out how we can use information to improve it. So I want to say thank you to the NextDrop staff and the engineers and commissioners at the Hubli Water Board and our many different funders for this project. So thank you, and I'd love to take questions. We've definitely, we often get the suggestion of sensors, and we've definitely thought a whole lot about it. Part of it is that there have been sensors, say, in the distribution system, pressure sensors, flow meters. The utility spent a lot of money. They work for 2 months, and then they stop working. So it would have to be within, you know, NextDrop's control. We've thought about, I think the most useful part for sensors would be to kind of verify the accuracy while we're training valvemen, to verify the accuracy of how they're actually doing. But there's 800 valve operations in each area. Sometimes even the areas kind of combined, so sometimes it's 2 hours here, 2 hours there, and sometimes the valvemen decides to change it and say 4 hours for both areas. So there's at least 800 areas that would need to be outfitted with sensors And even if you can get them down to $20, $30 with maintenance and everything else, that still gets to be pretty expensive. So I think maybe in a few years, that might be something that becomes more viable. But I think in the meantime, you should think about even simpler solutions, which is getting the people that are already physically there involved and just try to do it as absolutely simple as possible. I don't know if that was a very comprehensive answer, but it's definitely something. Yeah, we do want to work in more verification because, yeah, the most dangerous thing is to miss an update. Like, that's the worst possible thing. So we do want to work in more safeguards. So it might be often there's two valvemen maybe working nearby, so maybe having both of them send it, or there's a section officer above the valvemen, so we're working on other safeguards. I think sensors would be good for verification. I've just, in this city, especially with water supply, I've seen so many sensors just fail or so many more technologically complicated things fail, that I'm really nervous about their sustainability, to be honest. That was actually, I didn't talk about this, that was the original iteration of the system in summer of 2010, I believe. So before we got the valvemen to participate, we had a little contest going on where whoever would be the first in an area to send an update to us saying that water supply was there would get an award. So that was great, except, again, the messages were only able to be sent after people already had water and after they noticed it, which was then like 10 or 15 minutes into the supply. So we did that, and we think that might be a model for places where we can't get the valvemen to participate or the government to participate. But the valvemen are participating. They have even better information. So we think in the meantime that this is the best way to get information. And then right now we're crowdsourcing verifications. So we'll call people a few hours after the supply and say, did you get the update before the supply came? We'll randomly call two or three people to check on it. But yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we hadn't thought of that. That's a great idea. So, yeah, I've definitely seen that. I know people certainly do that in many areas, and that was a concern we thought about. What are the negative impacts of this, right? Does it mean that if only the richer people sign up for the service and they're the ones getting the notices, or then they the only ones that are taking water and everyone else that can't sign up for it? So, yeah, there's certainly always, you know, negative parts of it. I don't think in general people certainly use the pumps. I don't think it'll cause like an increase in the amount of pumps that are used because people know that the water is on. It tends to be certain isolated areas. But really my only good answer to that question is that, or that really good point, is that hopefully we're hoping that this service will help the entire system run better. So that's kind of the long-term goal, is if we can get it to be more equal, we can get better pressure to areas, because the reason people are hooking up pumps is there's not enough pressure to get the water otherwise. So we're hoping to just improve the overall reliability of the system and the functioning of the system, such that hopefully you can identify things like trouble spots where people aren't able to get water. Ideally, we've been asked to take complaints before. So many people are like, oh, is this a way that I can also complain about my water quality or about my neighbor having a pump and everything? We're a little bit nervous to get into that, but eventually we might want to, once we get this really up and going, we might want to have it as a way that people can say, everyone in my neighborhood has pumps, which is actually illegal. So having people being able to report that and kind of information and then figure out how to deal with it. But yeah, no, thanks for bringing it up. It's always good to think about what are the potential pitfalls of such a thing, or how can you potentially hurt people with technology. Great, well, thank you.